Hey guys, Greg and Danny here, back for our very last interview of our Christmas break. We had the joy and pleasure of sitting down with Charles Phipps, author of the Supervillainy Saga, as well as many other fantastic novels.
Thank you so much to Charles for taking the time to chat with us. We had a great time geeking out with him about all the geeky things. Also wanted to let everyone know that we will return from our Christmas break on January 14th with a review of Foundation by Isaac Asimov. So we're going to start the year off with a fun sci-fi classic. On that note, I hope everybody enjoys this interview we had with Charles Phipps. It was fantastic, and thank you one more time for joining us.
Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised.
The entire series.
I don't know what it was about this book. I loved it so much.
How do I know more about it than you do? And it's your number
one
book.
I'm bad with names, okay?
Spoilers, gosh.
And we are ready for some reading.
When in doubt, be lame.
Everyone buckle in. All right, we have with us today author of the Supervillainy Saga, which I found out does not have a step-by-step guide on becoming a supervillain. Please welcome Charles Phipps. How are you doing today?
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing good. I wanted to confirm with you real quick. I'm taking a wild stab out there, but you're a fan of superheroes and comic books, right?
Yes, I am there. I'm just the prototypical geek.
There you go. First question I have then, I've got to ask, kind of a geek check. What is your favorite superhero, and why is it Deadpool?
Very funny. I love Deadpool, truly, yeah. There, but he's an acquired taste that you, a bit like coffee, you want him in the morning, but you don't want to be drinking him all day.
I can understand that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. You know, I mean, I could be here all day talking about what superheroes and supervillains I like at what specific time there, and obviously it's Batman.
But, of course.
Every single hero brings something different to the table there, and while some I will say are more of my favorites than others, you just really have the whole gamut of whatever kind of story you want to tell with epic fantasy kind of heroes fighting alongside military heroes like Captain America, and you know, it's all really a matter of taste, and there's no wrong answer. When I was a teenager, Spider-Man was my favorite superhero, and then it became Batman, and stayed that way for a long time. But, you know, sometimes I just want to see a CW Supergirl or the Supergirl comic one punching bad guys because she's adorable.
There you go. That's as good an answer as I ever could think of, so I like it.
Batman is the best is what I heard. Yeah. That was the summary that I got out of that.
Batman is the best, and
yes,
there's
Batman, then 12 characters from Batman.
Right. And the Joker's in there somewhere. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, and then we go for Batman villains.
Right.
After that, Supergirl, and there's like characters that don't matter.
And then everyone else. That's just what you put.
Okay, so one thing that I'm just really curious about, your Twitter handle is the @WillowHugger. Where did that name come from?
It's kind of an interesting thing where you don't think something is going to become nearly as important as it does, and then it does become a vital part of your social media, and you don't want to change it and lose all your existing things. Basically, the short version is I was a big Buffy fan when I got on Twitter and made it to talk exclusively about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And, well... Then I became an author.
That put into that context, not a bad name. I like it a lot.
Tell me there is some fan art of you hugging Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
If I had fans specifically of my reviewing days of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'm sure someone would do that. But no.
All right. I've looked up and I saw that you've done tons of reviews on your blog, as well as you have been a judge for Spiffbo about 2 years in a row now. What is your favorite book, either from Spiffbo or your blog, that what's in your favorite one to read this year?
Are you doing that like Spectre from James Bond now, that we say it as one word versus the self-published fantasy blog off?
Exactly.
I want to check that.
There's so many words in the name of that competition.
Is. Yeah, we're so used to
I know. I'm just like, I don't think you can combine it that way, you know, or the the fantasy blog off, maybe.
Right, the fantasy blog off. Yeah, that'd probably be better.
Okay, but yes, I started reviewing books about 5 years ago when I first started writing because someone gave me the idea, you know, you need to build a social media presence. And I was like, well, how do I get in touch with my fellow fans of my genre? I was like, well, write about the stuff in the genre and make a name for yourself. Nice. And I, of course, ironically, I found out that was every bit as enjoyable as writing. And I made my first review site, the United States of Charles. Sorry, the United Federation of Charles, because I had to make it extra geeky.
Right, right. Nothing less.
Yes, yeah, that was my blog. And, you know, I have a small fan base there, but I mostly became acquainted with much better and more successful reviewers. And last year, Booknest.eu invited me to be a substitute judge at their site, and that led to me getting invited full-time to review for them.
Nice.
Oh, very nice.
So what is your favorite book that you've read this year so far?
Oh, that's a tough call there. I mean, there's always so many
Or some books that have stood out.
But if I had to make some choices, I'd probably go with Where Loyalty Lies by Rob J. Hayes, which is a dark fantasy pirate story. Mm-hmm. The Renwar Saga by M.L. Spencer, which is basically the premise of you have a ragtag band of misfits out to save the world, and then they fail. The rest of the series is picking up the pieces after screwing up their epic destiny.
Nice.
And third of all, I would go with Ulf Lehman's Shattered Dreams and Shattered Hopes, which is his attempt to do a George R. R. Martin kind of epic of seeing a fantasy war from the ground.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, okay. Where Loyalties Lie. We may have to go back and fix our podcast episode the other way because I completely forgot we read that book this year.
Yeah.
I loved that book. That was so good.
Oh, yes. He, Rob is a great guy, and I've read just about every single thing he's done. The two of us used to be in the same publishing house before we went our separate ways, and we actually do share one book published by the same publisher, Crossroad Press, his book being called Drones, which is a cyberpunk story. A very different genre from Where Loyalties Lies, but equally in my wheelhouse.
I was going to say, with Where Loyalties Lie, I was also, you know, neck deep in the video game Sea of Thieves, so... Pirates were a thing at the time.
You can tell what the new generation of fantasy authors is by the amount of video game influences which just show about everywhere. It's really easy to tell the difference between those before and after things like Baldur's Gate.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned that you started reviewing and stuff just to, you know, start interacting with other fans of fantasy and science fiction and everything, but it seems like every single time I join a new fantasy or sci-fi Facebook group, I see that you're super active on there. What keeps you active in all those groups? Like, why are you so active?
Well, it's kind of a thing where I was just led to a group of people I really enjoy the same things of, and I love talking about them, and if I can make a living from it, being an author in that genre, why not immerse yourself full-time on it? It's like a never-ending con, except without the con crud.
Right. Without getting sick, yep.
But, yeah, I've always loved talking my face blue about whatever I love on forums and so on there, and it occurred to me, well, you know, why not simply put it on your blog and make review and other people's blogs and share those thoughts and see if people like them, and people do, and I've made really some truly lasting friendships with my fellow authors doing all this, and I have no regrets.
It's so much fun, the community that is surrounded, especially the fantasy and sci-fi genre. Just how much fun you can have talking with other people that love the same books as you, because you're like, I'm reading this book. They're like, oh, my God, are you at this part? I'm at that part. Ah, you're both yelling and screaming. And
oh, yeah. The best part about being an author is, especially an indie author, is you can find so many books you never would have normally looked over, and they're very often things that color outside the lines, so to speak, of traditional fantasy, because there are no limits when you're your own boss, and very rarely do I find a book where I was going like, I'm sorry, man, I just don't like it. Very often I found gems that are things that have blown me away, and I've also had my own writing improved by the advice and insights of people just like me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. There have been some absolutely fantastic books in the self-publishing and indie world. It's incredible. The industry gets a bad reputation, but there are some amazing books out there.
Yeah, well, you know, there's I've actually been published by traditional publishers,
right.
And Crossroad Press is a mid-tier publisher, which was founded by a bunch of authors who are very famous names, like Brian Lumley and Clive Barker and David Neal Wilson, and people who all got together and underneath one banner to because they wanted their own created own content that didn't fall under all the rules where they're nickel and dimed.
Nice.
And you know, being part of that group is not that far from a traditional publishing, but it's just such a wide variety of big, small, and tiny groups there. And you know, there are plenty of great authors who are self-published, who are, I say, publish things every bit as good as what you'll find on the shelves.
Yeah.
There's still shelves in your town.
So I think you have to be one of the most wide-ranged list of published works that you have that we've seen from just about any author. I mean, you range from urban fantasy superhero, post-apocalyptic, science fiction, just about everything. How do you keep track of all the different stories and all the different styles? Whereas we see most authors usually hit stick to their lane. How do you keep track of all of those different styles?
Oh, well, it's a very interesting story on that kind of end. I originally thought I was going to be one of those authors who, like, I'm going to write this one series, and I'm going to write nothing but sequels to this series, and that's going to be my thing. And that series called the Red Room series, which is an urban fantasy spy series, that sold about 12 copies originally. And I'll continue with this story. While I was writing that there, I could not get a idea of a purely brain candy story of a average Joe geek kind of like myself and so many of my fans finding a magic cloak in a superhero world and being like, you know, I could use this to get really rich. And you know, that a pure pop culture Dresden Files celebration that would be just fun. And I decided, okay, I'm just going to write this, and I don't care if anyone reads it. It's just, I just need to get it out of my head. Mm-hmm. And I published that, and that sold. I think it's the series has sold about 400,000 copies.
Oh,
so,
wow. slight step up.
A little bit more success. And from there, I realized, well, if I get an idea for something, maybe I should just see how it rolls.
There you go.
Right.
Just see where it goes. Speaking of one of your, you know, some of your books, the Cthulhu Armageddon series, you mentioned in a blog post earlier this year, you know, you had the 15 tips for indie authors. And one of them was talking about using the public domain characters or mythos, you know, in your stories. In what way did you spin the Cthulhu story for this to make it your own using that public domain?
Well, it's a thing there. I love the Cthulhu mythos there. But a lot of people who try and dabble in the world just want to try and be H.P. Lovecraft as much as they can by writing short little stories where someone, oh my God, there's rats in the walls and they have human faces. I'm go insane at the end or die. Or I'm a rat myself. Just saying, like, they try and imitate the style there. This happens in Sherlock Holmes fandom, as I understand it as well, there, where you want to homage so much by being the person you wrote. And that's not what you should do. Mm-hmm. What you should do, the best way to honor authors and works and characters that you love is to take their concepts and put your own spin on them.
Right.
And like the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies are incredibly fun because they're Guy Ritchie films and Sherlock Holmes stories. And in my case, I wrote Cthulhu Armageddon with the premise, you know, I've read a lot about, they've stopped the Cthulhu being summoned just by the nick of the time, and everything is safe for another couple of hundred years, or you know, all these things where Cthulhu and the Armageddon either lose or it's a small scale thing. It's like, well, the apocalypse is such a big thing in the Cthulhu mythos, why don't we simply have it happen and then do something like Mad Max?
There you go.
Okay, the world's been destroyed, the great old ones rose, nuclear missiles flew, war lasted 10 minutes, the old ones won, humanity is now in this alien world reformed around the great old ones and trying to scrape by in their shadow. And I thought that was a very interesting concept, and see what I could do. I, you know, drew plenty of video game influences, as I've mentioned, and people really liked it. It's one of probably my second most successful series, and, you know, it's cheating where you create something where, as some people say, using other people's famous characters, but I don't think so, because if it's a good story with them, that's what they want.
Yeah, I think if somebody uses the public domain and doesn't do it well, like you were talking about, I think that it that's going to show. Like, you're not automatically going to hit success just because you use something that people already like.
Yeah, it's putting your own twist on it, like you did with Cthulhu Armageddon, putting that your own flair, your own twist, still making it a new story, but, you know, basing off something that people know and they get some more interested.
I mean, I am a product of the 21st century, and H.P. Lovecraft was a product of the very early 20th, and in many ways, and the two of us couldn't be more different. So, you know, why not simply show our different approaches to it? Yeah. And interesting enough, Crossroad Press had many writers who've dabbled in the mythos. One of their early series was the audiobook versions of the Titus Crowe series, which was by Brian Lumley, who did Necroscope. Mm-hmm. And his take on that was, what if I had Doctor Who fight the Cthulhu mythos?
Huh.
That would be a cool fight.
Yeah, how did that go?
He has a time machine, and he's a wizard who goes around fighting the mythos. It's nice. It's really,
I love it.
A very silly series.
That's awesome. There's a board game I've played a ton of called Eldritch Horror, which is all about fighting the different Cthulhu and different H.P. Lovecraft monsters. And it's definitely, the game's over when they win, which they usually do because it's a very difficult game. It's kind of cool to think about what would happen if they did win, kind of thing.
Yeah, the Cthulhu Armageddon's protagonists, John and Mercury, are a pair that aren't going trying to retake the world from the mythos. They're just trying to survive the next day, kind of a Walking Dead style. But they intend to die hard if they can.
Bruce Willis style.
And then on some of your other books, like, you've got I Was a Teenage Weirdeer, which is probably the most unique title I think I've heard. Weirdeer. Where did the weirdeer come from?
Well, I get the point. There's a whole story. I Was a Teenage Weirdeer, and the Bright Falls Mysteries is one of two series set in the same world, which is the United States of Monsters series. Mm-hmm. And the other book series is that starts with Straight Outta Fankton.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of fun with coming up with the titles with those two series.
Oh, yeah. I love the sequels.
Are 100 Miles and Vamping, and which just came out, and An American Weirdeer in Michigan. yeah.
Love it.
The idea for I Was a Teenage Weirdeer came just with the idea. There were so many werewolf stories, which I've read because I love urban fantasy, but they tend to be either, I'm such a terrible, burly, scary monster kind of stories from the male perspective, or romance novels involving werewolves, which whatever you want to say about those. I like some of them and some of them that I don't. And the idea was, what if I could make the least threatening kind of a shape changer, but still plausible, because stags are noble creatures? And then it immediately occurred, you know, I'm going to have to name this character Jane Doe.
Obviously, yeah.
Perfect.
Yes, and Jane Doe is every bit as snarky and irreverent a kind of character. And from there, I just made my sort of Buffy the Vampire Slayer with a different set of powers kind of stories, which take place in a small town called Bright Falls, Michigan, which is full of shifters and dark spirits and all these sorts of other things going on. And Jane, with her plucky reserve, is the one who wants to get right up in their face, while her werewolf friends are much more cautious.
Nice.
So it's very much the Sunnydale of Michigan.
Oh, yes. Though everything in Michigan is kind of Sunnydale-ish, because in this world, kind of like the Sookie Stackhouse books, the supernatural has come out and is public, but that's just caused it to become much more open and in some ways more powerful. And the people who want to live a normal human lives are doing their best to try and keep the much darker elements out of the way of human eyes. And they're not doing a too great of a job.
And you have a new book out in that series. That's the sequel to Straight Outta Fankton, right?
Yes. Straight Outta Fankton was, again, we another kind of parody of how urban fantasy is usually done kind of books. Mm-hmm. With I Was a Teenage Weredeer, Jane Doe is a very non-threatening kind of looking person who carries a big magic gun and is very much wanting to get in the face of the supernatural. She has a bit of a Napoleon syndrome in that.
Nice.
And Straight Outta Fankton was based on the premise of, so what if we had a vampire protagonist who works the graveyard shift at a convenience store and has had none of the sexy, awesome, wealthy benefits that virtually every other vampire in urban fantasy has been depicted as having?
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Peter Stone basically is living Clerks, and he's a poor black vampire just trying to get by. He's been turned into the undead, but that doesn't make him any sexier or richer or more loved, and just increased his problems.
Of course.
There you go.
And in his case, he has a very powerful, important kind of vampire creator who He constantly gets involved in the backdraft from the events of, while never quite reaping the benefits.
Are those books mysteries in the same way as the like the Teenage Weirdier books are, or are they different?
I think they're more straight up adventures. There's a certain level of mystery elements, but Peter just tends to bang him his head against the wall until something pops out.
His skull, or
I'm not meaning it literally. There, Jane actually has to solve mysteries because one of her abilities that comes with being a weredeer is she can read objects, psychometry. Every shifter has a kind of psychic power to go along with their powers, because why not? It's my world.
Right.
Peter's case he has the general vampire power set of being tougher and harder to kill, but his powers are kind of lame otherwise.
Right.
He becomes a corgi.
Nice.
There you go. Terrifying. Cool.
Yes.
So since those two series exist in the same universe, do their stories ever intersect? Do Peter and Jane ever meet?
My stories intersect to a certain extent where in the first Weredeer book, while Jane's going through some local crime boss's papers, she finds some letters and papers that reference another character in the Straight Outta Fankton series reveal they're linked. And I haven't had the two meet yet, but I look forward to having that eventually happen. More likely it'll be side characters showing up in one world or another. But the two places, Bright Falls and... New Detroit, because the vampires bought out the city and more or less rebuilt it as Vegas. Well, Halloween Vegas, as I call it. In that case, they're actually only about 30 miles apart there, and in real life, Bright Falls is in Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Little joke there.
Yeah. Going on to arguably your most popular series, the Supervillainy Saga. You know, 5 books currently published with the tournament of supervillainy just recently being released. What do you think, what about these books right here, the Supervillainy Saga, what do you feel puts them apart, sets them apart from your other books?
Well, I think a lot of my books are in fact influenced by the Supervillainy Saga there, but they are the original... this book is here to entertain you. Don't actually think too deeply about it.
Okay.
Sure. Okay.
I'm not trying to make any overt political or universal statements there. It's just Gary is a hamster on coffee going through all the tropes and
right?
tribulations of a guy who is transported to a superhero universe that follows all the rules of comic books, no matter how nonsensical.
Yeah.
Poor guy is mourning his dead friend who comes back the next chapter. It's just they're not purely silly. They don't make fun of these tropes there,
no.
But right. They are real, and he is often jerked around by them greatly.
Yeah, I've started the first supervillainy book on audiobook, and it's just fun to listen to in the car, and just I don't know. It's just fun to giggle at and laugh at and just have a good time with.
I will actually give so many props to Jeffrey Kafer, my audiobook narrator for the Supervillain Saga, that I actually think it's a series better enjoyed listened to rather than purely read.
And oh, really?
I don't say that lightly. He did just such a magnificent job with all the characters and their trials and tribulations. And the thing about the Tournament of Supervillainy is each of the books parodies a different kind of superhero trope or origins. The first book being the origin story, of course. Right. The second book being a zombie apocalypse that he tries to deal with. the third book deals with all the kind of X-Men-ish persecuted for their powers and how that doesn't actually make much sense.
Right.
And the fourth book deals with alternate universes. And finally, the fifth book is the big parody of the big crisis and crossover kind of books. And I have characters from My Agent G and I Was a Teenage Weredeer show up in that universe.
So it's your Avengers book. It's your MCU right. book.
Yes, it was because they get all drawn from different universes to stop this coming apocalypse kind of thing there. And all the people from more serious universes are like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've heard in my entire life. Right so, before they realize, oh, God, it's real.
So what is, like, the basic story or basic premise of the Supervillainy Saga?
Well, I mentioned earlier, the idea is Gary is a ordinary 30-something slightly underachieving geek who is trapped in a dead-end job. He's happily married, though, which is a bit of a subversion, and trying to make his mark. And he comes across a magic cloak through circumstances that gives him a small level of powers, roughly similar to a ghost. He can walk through walls, conjure fire and cold, and generally is harder to kill than before. And he decides to become a supervillain quite to everyone's confusion, because most people don't kind of think I'm going to be a criminal in that respect. And the thing is, Gary is not quite evil enough to pull it off.
Right, yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's willing to rob his ex-employers and people he dislikes and other bad guys there, but unwittingly ends up saving the day several times. And we also roughly find out that Gary has a bit more of a past with supervillains and superheroes than he might think. For instance, he dated the equivalent of Supergirl in college.
Right.
And never putting it together that his girlfriend was Supergirl, you know, just like, oh, that's ridiculous. My girlfriend wears glasses.
Right.
I always loved that it was that thing was Superman. Yeah, that's
Clark Kent's disguise, his glasses.
Yes. Yeah, and again, because Gary is as immersed in these ridiculous tropes as anyone else there, he just has a slightly better eye for it. And also his brother was a supervillain, and right. that's why he has this view that they're just, and he died tragically, and he just has this kind of skewered view of what they are and what they do.
I do love I believe it was the cloak that he has as well that he got. And I love that it's almost like a conscience to him, because he's saying all these things, and the cloak is like, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, his magic cloak was the belonged to the rough equivalent of both Batman and Doctor Strange.
Right.
So, and it's inhabited by his ghost. So, so Gary is stuck with Bruce Wayne's voice in his head there.
Nice.
And Bruce Wayne
makes the whole thing all the more ridiculous.
And Bruce Wayne's voice is very annoyed.
Yes, it's like, I'm only working with you because it's slightly better than letting you fail at this point. There's a disaster going. So,
right.
Let's work something out here.
Right.
You mentioned that the newest book, The Tournament of Supervillainy, has characters from your other books as well. How did that come about? How did the story get to that point where you're like, you know what, I need my other characters as well here?
Well, I try and do a different kind of superhero idea or thing to each new book to keep it fresh. And the big crossover is one of the obvious things you can do there, but you can't do that in your own makeshift superhero world, because no one's going to care if your Superman, Wonder Woman, and Supergirl equivalents show up there. They do that normally.
Right.
Yes. So, and it occurred to me, well, I have a reasonable fan base for everything. So why don't I just throw in my other characters and see how they react against each other? And, you know, it might be a mess or it might work out great. And it was funny seeing how some characters absolutely hated Gary while others got along with him like a house on fire.
There you go.
Yeah. My Agent G books, which I haven't mentioned yet, are a series that's someone called them a cyberpunk version of Hitman, and I think that's as good as anything. He's a cybernetically enhanced a soldier who deals with kind of missions to wipe out whoever his bosses tell them to it, and it's a very dark and ambiguous world, which is slightly more realistic than all my other worlds. You know, I mean, cyberpunk aside there, it's still the same United States as we have. Mm-hmm. And he gets thrown in the superhero world, and he's like, I don't want to go back. I mean, this is a magical, wonderful world, crazy explosions as it may be, and I live in a place where everyone is a jerk. And then there's Jane, who comes from a world of vampires, werewolves, and all sorts of monsters, and she's like, well, this is a pretty awesome place.
I like this place a lot better.
Yeah, and you know, but she also appreciates perhaps better than G just that all the crazy good comes with equally crazy evil, and she's just every bit as snarky and irritating as Gary is to other people. So the two of them are like, wow, you are like the sibling I never wanted.
So we've talked a lot about all the different kind of books you've written, all the different series. What would you say, if you could, what would you say was your favorite one to write, whether it's a series or a book?
Well, that question is a riddle for the ages, because every book that I write at the moment I'm writing is probably my favorite book series.
Nice.
Because the inspiration overwhelms everything else there. It's like, the Cthulhu books are the greatest thing ever. They're so deep and tragic, and oh god, I just got a great idea for a Gary book.
There you go.
of course.
Just very much whatever you're on at the time. That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So what was the last book that you finished writing, or what are you in the middle of writing right now?
Right now I'm thinking about doing a book for two more books for the United States of Monsters, Camp Weir- Deerwood, which is the third Jane book. That's a parody of 80s slasher movies. Nice. She's hired by that aforementioned crime lord to serve as security on his cheap B-movie slasher films.
Of course.
That she doesn't want to do there, but she's run out of money and doesn't have the morals to. And, of course, there's actually a real-life slasher monster that's menacing the whole set.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and the third book, which is Vampires for Life, because each of them is named after an NWA album, that's not really a hard thing to do. And that one is about Peter finally getting rid of his job at the convenience store and trying to make a real stand against the elder vampires of New Detroit and all the how truly bad an idea that is.
It sounds like you have so much fun writing all these stories, because they sound like a good time. Whichever way you do it and all the different styles you do, they sound like fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing I want to do with my writing, and I think why people come to my books there. I have made darker and more serious stories there, but at the end they are just meant to be entertainment for people who involved. Some people have sent me letters about how oddly enough these just ridiculously fun books have meant something to them, because one fan commented on how they were really fond of a minor character called the Human Tank in the Supervillain Saga, because her story was that she's a trans gender super villain that went through a period. And I consulted a friend of mine who was, and that story really touched them, and told me about how much it had meant in their life. And other characters, just, you know, more minors, like, oh, I really like that you included Indian characters here.
No, that's cool.
Well, since you do have such a wide array of genres that you dabble in, do you have any sort of different processes for each different series that you go into, or do you kind of approach each one the same way?
Well, one of my early recommendations from when I was trying to become a writer and no one actually knew how to tell me how to do it, they told me to check out Stephen King's book On Writing.
Okay.
And you know, that was such pretty obvious advice when from people that, you know, I don't actually expect you to become a writer. But one thing that actually stuck with me, the advice that has gotten me through a lot of things, the other being the two rules being one, don't ever think your work is good. Yes, think it's garbage 99% of the time. You'll be right until you rewrite it until it's good. Aww. And the second rule, which it was on writing, surround yourself in the genre that you're trying to write.
Okay.
Yes, Stephen King called it the milk rule, where whatever you put milk up against in a refrigerator will eventually taste a little like it.
Interesting. Okay.
I think that's an urban legend, but yeah. The idea but it makes whenever sense I write vampires, writing. I watch a crap ton of vampire movies. Lost Boys, Interview with a Vampire, things I've already watched before and will watch many again just for fun, Underworld. And you know, and Blade, and just let all that stuff flow into my mind and saying like, "Okay, I'm now in the mood to write about vampires." And the same for superheroes and so on.
No, there was a really good quote I read on your website that I really liked, where you said, "Don't expect to be a full-time writer after your first book. Expect it after your 13th.
Or
30th. Yeah. 30th, I believe. Yes, sorry. At what point did you feel you crossed that threshold into full-time writing?
Yes, I did. And it took a couple of years, I think three, in fact, before I was like, okay, I'm fine with continuing my writing. I'm not making any more money in academia as I would be with just writing more. And you know, that was a big decision. But the thing was, by that point, I'd already developed contacts in the publishing industry and had multiple books out. And really, and the thing was, that was after a couple of bombs and re-releases and things that hadn't caught on. You know, I had to accept this was not something you could just jump off on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And very few authors managed to make it work. And one of the most depressing things I ever heard was an author who did become a full-time writer and then had to stop.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Just it didn't pan out.
Yeah, just well, it's you know, he succeeded. He had a successful book. It kept him going for a few years, and then sales kind of dipped down. I mean that was a real kick in the stomach for him. And yeah, I could totally understand that. But the thing is that you truly should write because you love to write, and its success as a profession is a feast or a famine.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, just keep at it there, but keep your options open, so to speak.
Yeah,
okay. It's kind of like acting in that respect. You can be big and then not, or you can be a never been, or you can be a minor success. You know, I mean, there's just like with acting, there are the people on daytime television, there's the megastars, and there's the people who do the college theater.
Right.
Okay, well, that was all of the questions that we had for you. Thanks for coming on with us. We had a great time. Where can our listeners find your work or find you if they just wanted to chat with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook and Twitter, at Willow Hugger for Twitter. And you can also find me on BookNest for looking at my reviews, or the United Federation of Charles. But, you know, if you want to read my stuff, just go look up C.T. Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S, on Amazon, BookBub, and other locations. And I'm sure you'll find one of my books and I recommend all of them.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. We've been really enjoying the supervillainy saga. But like we've been talking about, you have so many great series. So definitely go check this guy out. Thank you so much for being on. We had tons of fun, and we can't wait to see more from you.
Oh, yes. I'd love to come on again.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good one.
Bye-bye.